I'm Jenna, and we have a fun topic for our time this morning. So how many of you, anyone currently working in food service or in the restaurant world, or have you before in the past worked in the restaurant world? Yeah, okay, so you know the phrase in the weeds, right? So our first year when Jason and I were first married and I was 21, I served tables at Trudy's in Hyde Park. And I still sometimes have dreams about those nights where I was just so buried in the weeds. And I'll wake up and my heart will be pounding and I'll be like, you know, that table never got their queso. And I thinking about it right now, my palms can start sweating. So I'd like to kick us off. You know, think about what that feels like. That phrase in the weeds so perfectly captures the feeling overwhelmed where the stress of the situation so exceeds our capacity to deal with it. So perhaps take a moment and think about an in the weeds experience you have maybe had at work, or it might be in your personal life. Maybe it's in the weeds because of family stress or a health crisis or a relationship. Any number of situations can bring that on. So just think about an experience you've had and turn to a neighbor. And if you're willing, take a moment and share, and then I'll check back in with you. Could I maybe hear what any, like, outside of working in a restaurant, any other life situations conjure up that feeling of being in the weeds? Just call out one. What did taxes... financial issues can put us in the weeds. What else? Last semester of college. Something else? Two kids under two. Yes, in the weeds. One more. What did you say? Dealing with big brothers. Quite possibly, yes. So lots of situations can cause us to feel overwhelmed, the stress exceeds our capacity to deal with it. And so our text for today is the story of Jonah, who spent a lot of time in the weeds. So you may remember Jonah's a preacher. God sends him to preach to the Ninevites, this whole city of people that Jonah does not like. So he sails off in the other direction. A storm comes. He ends up in the water. A fish comes, swallows him up. He spends 3 days in the fish, but he doesn't die. And then he's given another chance. So he goes to Nineveh, and he's actually very helpful to them. And they all make it out of the weeds. And at the end of the story, Jonah's still grumpy, and he's sunburned, and he's not happy about any of it. But it's a story with a lot of twists and turns. And at each point, we learn something about seeing how God responds to Jonah and to the Ninevites at times when they're suffering. And there's this one really stirring line Jonah says from inside the fish where he says, "The waters closed in around me. The deep surrounded me. The weeds were wrapped around my head." And when we feel ourselves buried in the weeds, whether we think it's our fault or not, when we're suffering and things feel out of control, it can be very confusing and difficult to know how to make sense of what's happening. We may sometimes wonder if we're being punished for mistakes that we may have made. Other times we just want to know, what can I do about it? Like, how do I make the pain stop? And other times we may be asking, like, where is God in this? And how would God respond to me if I were to reach out? So these are questions I'm going to invite us to be thinking about together this morning. Today is the third Sunday of Epiphany. It's a time we carve out to reflect on those things that Christ came to reveal to us about God. And the story of Jonah is one that Jesus references in his teachings, and it has some hopeful things to say about times when we may find ourselves feeling in the weeds. So as is our custom, I invite us to read aloud Jonah chapter 3, verses 4 through 10 to one another. All right, so The story of Jonah spans several chapters, and this text falls right in the middle. And the part that comes before it, the part about the fish, is a popular story to tell to children. And throughout this whole story, there's a lot of adult suffering in this story. So to start out with, Jonah didn't want to go to the Ninevites because of racism and hatred. He felt superior to them. So when God sends him to go preach to them, it sort of flings Jonah into this existential crisis because he sees it as a sign that God cares about them, which begins to shatter Jonah's illusions about himself and his people being racially and spiritually superior. So he's suffering, sort of like a midlife crisis, when he gets on the boat and starts sailing the other direction. And then the storm comes, so there's more suffering on the boat. And then Jonah does this really brave, sort of selfless thing where he takes responsibility and he's like, this storm is probably my fault. So he gets the sailors to throw him overboard. And then that's when he's swallowed by the fish. And when Jesus preaches on this story, he talks about these 3 days in the fish. He likens it to a kind of death. It's suffering. He's in the weeds. He's unable to see a way out. And when we find ourselves in that situation, whether we believe it's our fault or not, or we're not sure, that pain can feel like a punishment, right? You've heard it said before that pain is a great teacher. And sometimes it is. But how receptive we are to learning often depends on who we believe is responsible for that pain. So the first question we might ask of this story is, was Jonah's pain a punishment from God for things that he did wrong, for not going to Nineveh the first time, or for running away, or just being rebellious? It does say the Lord provided a large fish to swallow Jonah up. Can we go to the next slide? It says the Lord provided it, and the Lord sent this fish to swallow him up. Ancient texts written around this time, they talk about the acid from the fish's stomach had started to eat away at Jonah's skin. They say when he was back on land, that's why he was so sensitive to being sunburned. Suffering. He was suffering. And you know, historians will say all sorts of things about whether or not this story could or couldn't have happened this way. It's a story that makes a point. And suffering plays a prominent role in the story. It sort of moves the plot forward. And if we think that God was punishing Jonah, it makes sense that we would see his time in the fish as sort of like a timeout. And like I spent a lot of time in timeout as a child to try to get me to behave, which in my family meant being sent alone to my room for long stretches of time to think about what I'd done wrong. Nowadays, I understand many of you parents might have like a timeout chair at some place in your home where the child can stay with the family, though, still, but have a place where they have to just sit. And you may have one of these right now. I've seen some that are pretty clever. Like, here's one I found that says, sit your naughty bottom here. This one says, little girls are made of sugar and spice, but you are a little too spicy today. There's another one that looks like a little prison, and it says, do the crime, do the time. This next one says, it just keeps it simple. It's like, have mercy on me, O Lord, for I'm in trouble. And this last one may be my favorite. It says, I must ask you to behave. So children hearing this story about Jonah and the fish, it would be natural for them to think of it as a form of punishment, a time out to try to get Jonah to behave better. And yet, I'm not sure that's entirely what's going on between God and Jonah in this story. You may see it differently, but take a look with me again at this prayer that Jonah prays from inside the fish. He starts out, God, you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas. And yet, the story says Jonah chose to be thrown overboard. He was trying to be helpful to the other sailors. He thought that they would survive if he were to die. And then as he hits the water, it says, "The floods surrounded me. The waters closed in over me. The deep surrounded me. The weeds were wrapped around my head. And yet you brought my life up from the pit." It's the prayer of someone who sees God as being kind and helpful, less punishing and more rescuing. You may think about when a child is in pain or in danger, even if it's the child's fault. Parents have a way of sensing when their child is in over their heads. And I was reminded of a story Karen and Gideon tell of a time when their son Joshua was just a preschooler, and I asked his permission to tell this story. I think we've got some pictures. Ah. Is there one more? Joshua. So they were at a pool party, and he was really little. And even though they weren't very far away, Joshua stepped off the step into water way deeper than he could stand. And when they went to look for him, all they saw was the top of his head, and everything else was submerged. And so Gideon says, you know, he dove in to like try to get to him, to scoop him up. He says when he got close, he could see that Joshua was kind of okay. He was just holding his breath, calmly walking along the bottom of the pool, just trying to make it back to safety. Joshua may have been too young to realize how dangerous of a situation he'd stepped into. But the fact that he had perhaps accidentally or maybe purposefully stepped off into deep water didn't change his parents' willingness to jump in and help him. They didn't see their child underwater and be like, "Well, he has chosen this, so drowning shall be his punishment." You know, no. So perhaps we'll allow that image to come back to us in times when the weeds are wrapped around our head and we feel close to drowning. That it's possible the pain we're feeling is not a punishment, but something else entirely is going on here. Jesus taught that the sun rises on the evil and the good, and the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. And the reality is that painful times will come regardless of what we've done or not done. And so perhaps keeping this in mind will open up new possibilities for ways we can be receptive to God's help during those times where we're in the weeds. Okay, let's keep going, because there may be other questions we're also asking, like, when we're in the weeds, what the heck can we do about it? Like, how do we make that pain stop? So let's look at how this story continues. So the fish spits Jonah back up on dry land, and he's given a second chance to go to Nineveh. So Nineveh is a city in modern-day northern Iraq. And at that time, violence seems to have been their biggest problem. So we can imagine a very large, violent city where people were probably often suffering. So it says, Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's walk, and he cries out, 40 days more, and Nineveh will be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believe God, and they proclaim a fast, and everyone, great and small, puts on sackcloth. So here we come to the next place of the story where suffering plays a prominent role. Because when they hear Jonah's message, the people of Nineveh appear to realize we're in the weeds and it's about to get worse. And so they just stop everything. They proclaim a fast. It would be like as if across all of Austin, everyone just stopped. Everything. They stopped going to work. They stopped having sex, driving, watching TV, eating, just everything stopped. It says, the king himself rose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. So these were death rituals. These were things people did when they were preparing for a funeral. So this is an interesting way to think about this question of what can we do when we discover we're in the weeds and things feel like they're just falling apart. We can just pause and reflect and pray. But when we're really suffering, how do we find that really easy to do? Like, show of hands, how many of you find it easy to just let things fall apart, just pause and let things fall apart around you and just embrace the chaos? Or how many of us start to panic and rush around just trying to find something to fix? Yeah. So I'm about to show you my typical response most of my life to when I find myself in the weeds. Have you developed an appreciation yet for the Japanese slippery slide? So I never knew it before, but when I saw this for the first time, I was like, oh, I know this game. I know it so well. So here it is. Take a look. It's mesmerizing. And so every time one of them falls down and then scrambles to get back up, I'm like, oh, brother, I feel you. I feel you. It's not working. I'm getting bruised. I'm taking other people out with me. But it's so tempting to just keep trying the same thing over and over again. And I watched it for a long time, like longer than you think I watched it. I watched it. And I never saw them get to the top. They just keep trying. So what if, instead, the next time we find ourselves in the weeds, what if instead of scrambling, we just did nothing? Like, just stop. Take a beat. Pray. Proclaim a fast. Put on sackcloth. Just sit in the weeds for like a minute. And reflect, take inventory, look around, reflect on what's not working. Sometimes it's our own mistakes catching up with us, or sometimes it's a crisis with our health or our personal life or our relationship. James Hollis is a psychoanalyst, and he says this: it's a shock to realize that one is not even able to manage one's own life very well. Thus, apart from the shock and confusion, even panic, the fundamental result of discovering that is to be humbled. With Job, we sit atop the dung heap, bereft of illusion, and we wonder where it all went wrong. And yet, out of this experience may come new life. We must take the turn within in order to grow. So I think this is what the Ninevites were doing. They stop and they turn within in order to grow. And here's the thing. It feels like there's no time, but there's time. There's always time. Because while things often are as serious as they seem, they're rarely as urgent as they seem. Meaning it's rarely the case that we can't take 5 minutes, an hour, a day, 3 days, or a whole season of life to just slow down, turn within, pray. And the solutions we discover when we do are often very different than the solutions we've been trying previously. And the things we learn about God and about ourselves are often things we find we couldn't have learned any other way. All right, let's wrap up now by turning to look at how this ends for the Ninevites. So they carve out time to fast and pray and turn within, because who knows? God may relent and change his mind. God may turn from his anger so we do not perish. They weren't really sure how God was going to respond. It sounds like they were wrestling with a lot of the same questions we wrestle with when we find ourselves in the weeds and things are no longer working. Questions like, am I being punished? What can I do? Where is God? And how will God respond if I reach out? Taking time to pause and turn within, like the Ninevites do, allows us to become curious about God, about ourselves, about what new possibilities might exist for who we could become and how we might engage life and our relationships. James Hollis calls this being willing to encounter our dragons. And this is actually a very orthodox Christian way to think about what we find when we pause and take time to pray and turn within, that we often encounter parts of ourselves that we've relegated to the shadows. The violence that lives within us. Things we're ashamed of. Things we numb and avoid feeling and acknowledging. And according to Christian tradition, spiritual maturity requires that we engage our dragons. Because whatever we refuse to see and acknowledge ends up running us. So this is one way to think about what Jonah was doing inside the fish. He perhaps started to face his dragons of his own racism, his hatred, his religiosity. Perhaps this is what the Ninevites are doing when they are praying and fasting. They're engaging their dragons of their own violence, the things they haven't been willing to see before. This kind of experiential learning that often happens when we're in the weeds, it moves knowledge of God and of ourselves from our head deep down into our bones. Here's another way to think about it. Suffering seems to be a prerequisite for transformation. Authentic suffering, which requires encounters with our dragons, whereas inauthentic suffering implies flight from them. And yet it's natural that we would want to flee from that kind of painful transformation. And it's interesting to notice that while Jonah at first resists the invitation, the Ninevites just embrace it right away. So regardless of if we put it off and put it off, or if we choose to just dive in and engage it, God is patient with us and just continues providing opportunity after opportunity. Are you familiar with the work of Jackson Pollock, the painter? When Pollock first started painting, he spent a lot of time imitating other artists. So these are some of his earlier works. If you're familiar with his work, you might not even recognize this as him. And in his early years, Pollock was suffering from depression, alcoholism, broken relationships. His painting was just a way to pay the bills. And so eventually he just stopped. And he started working with a Jungian analyst who helped him stop drinking. And that analyst encouraged him also to stop trying to paint things and instead to create art that would be an outpouring of his mind, an expression of what he felt most deeply and authentically. The soul, our authentic self that knows itself to be inherently loved by God, is often encountered through suffering, time spent in the weeds. And we see Pollock's work evolve as he begins to face his dragons. So here's a quote from a critic in Pollock's later years who says this: "To paint the way he did, directly as an action and without premeditation, meant that he had to forge a path straight to his inner self. When the subject of your art is the mind itself, the work becomes a window into consciousness. He was a transcendent painter, and he remains profoundly important today." When we turn within, when we take time to encounter our dragons, when we become curious about ourselves and about God, we discover possibilities during our time in the weeds that we hadn't been open or receptive to before. For instance, according to Jonah and the Ninevites, God changes God's mind about the calamity they thought God was going to bring on them. The Ninevites discover, and what Jonah discovers, is that regardless of whether or not they deserve it, God is not, in fact, punishing towards any of them. And perhaps the most challenging part of this whole story, and what's always been the most challenging part of the gospel, is not how hard it is to please God. That's not it. But it's how we find God's mercy and grace and kindness and gentleness when we don't deserve it, so hard to believe. Richard Rohr says it this way. He says, "The people who know God well, the mystics, the hermits, the prayerful people, those who risk everything to find God, always meet a lover, not a dictator." So as we close, perhaps maybe could I invite you to take a moment and notice again what the weeds in your life feel like, what they might be. And so maybe if you think of an area of your life where you feel yourself to be in the weeds right now, maybe just take a moment, take a deep breath. Just say to yourself, in this area of my work or my health or my personal life, I'm in the weeds. But this pain may not be a punishment. Maybe try saying that out loud. Pain is not a punishment. And though things may be as serious as they seem, they're rarely as urgent as they seem. Would you say that with me? Things are rarely as urgent as they seem. There's almost always time to pause and pray and turn within. And when we do, we'll find God is with us there in the weeds. No matter what you've done or haven't done, no matter what mistakes you think may have landed you here, God is with you. And we need to hear that, especially when we're in the weeds. So could I invite you to turn to a neighbor right now and just say, God is with you. God is with you. God is with you. Being gentle and kind, and God will never leave you to face your dragons alone. So let's close, if you will, by praying the prayer of Jonah aloud together. The words will be up on the screen. Lord God, you cast me into the deep.
Into the heart of the seas, and the floods surrounded me. The waters closed in over me. The deep surrounded me. The weeds were wrapped around my head. Yet you brought up my mind.